The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Sorry, Houseman, present. Howard, present. Representative Tice?
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Representative Egbadje?
Present.
Egbadje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, present.
Hassan, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr?
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Farr?
Present.
Farr, present. Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. The next item of business is approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 15. Representative Howard, would you like to move the minutes?
Sorry, Madam Chair. Yes, I would move the minutes.
Members, any corrections? Seeing none, please unmute for a voice vote. All those in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, the only item on the agenda today is a presentation from Minnesota Housing on Governor Walz's 2022 Housing Supplemental Budget Proposal. We have the commissioner here to give us an overview of the budget. Commissioner Ho, welcome back to the committee. If it's okay with you, we will have you give your presentation, and then once you have concluded your comments, we'll open it up for member questions and discussion, if that works for you.
Thank you, Chair Houseman and members of the committee. It's great to be back, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to present our budget recommendations. My name is Jennifer Ho, and I am the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. I think Dan Kitzberger is with me, I think, managing the slide deck. And I also have with me Ryan Baumtrod, my Assistant Commissioner for Policy and Community Development. Just before jumping in, I just have to say that I am very excited about this package. And if you take a look, as we'll do in a couple minutes, I think this is really about using this unique moment in time that we have to be able to look to the general fund, to be able to make critical investments, really on the whole continuum of housing needs that Minnesotans face, everything from homelessness to home ownership, from production to preservation. Between the needs for rental housing and the needs for single family home ownership and the needs from prenatal kids and housing stability through seniors. And so it is a pretty comprehensive package. And I think that that also means that for folks who have a strong interest in meeting the housing needs in Minnesota, it's a package where everybody, I think, can see their stake in the ground. And so we should be able to pull something together that really meets a lot of needs. We don't have to be incremental. And it's big. It's very, very, very big. Go big was a motto when I first started here 3 years ago. This is what go big looks like. But go big because, of course, the need is great. Not big for big sake. Big, but because we have a big challenge ahead, and so I just want to frame it in that way. If you take a look at the supplemental budget recommendations, it's $409.5 million in new investments over 3 years, the rest of this biennium and the next, and again, kind of covering a range of things. If you include the capital investment budget, it actually brings the total to $719 million when you look at the addition of the $250 million of the housing infrastructure bond proposal and $60 million for public housing rehabilitation. It is historic, but I think, we are at a moment where where we can afford to do the right thing and to have it be at this scale. And, you know, I think I just came back from Washington, D.C., meeting with our congressional delegation and my counterparts. And I think there is this sense that with inflation and housing inflation and the cost of lumber and everything else that we're facing, that if the cost of housing keeps rising and we don't continue to tackle it, it's only going to become a problem that's harder and harder and harder to solve. And so, you know, this really is a prime opportunity to make these long-term structural investments that are necessary in order to really begin to tackle the things that we're feeling. I mean, there's not a single meeting kind of in the business community where the needs for housing doesn't come up. You know, I know that we're thinking so much right now about the need around kids and stability in schools. So, you know, I probably in this hearing have mentioned too many times my aging parents and just the need to have them age with dignity. So next slide, please. So the top line of the money, if you take a look at it across our buckets, is that this is the way that it breaks out between building and preserving more homes, supporting and strengthening home ownership, and increasing housing stability. And I will go through these items in a little bit more detail. I understand, Chair Houseman, that this is the agenda item today, so I can take my time. But if you want me to speed up at any point in time, just let me know.
No, we have only this agenda item, so I think we are in good shape for time.
Great. Well, I get excited about this, so I can go on, but I'll try to use some discipline here with the slides. So let's talk about building and preserving more homes. This was last summer, that photo, being out at a groundbreaking. It's great to do, to have the opportunity to be out and actually see the work getting done. So the Economic Development Housing Challenge Program, affectionately known as Challenge, is our special sauce. It's the program that we have here in Minnesota that gives us extraordinary flexibility to respond to local needs in terms of what communities are saying they want to do to develop or to preserve housing, both rental and home ownership. And within home ownership, it also includes local down payment assistance programs. If you take a look at the existing base for 2023, it's $12.9 million, 25.8, 24, 25. If you take a look at these proposed increases, it's a more than doubling, I guess would be the rounded math on that. And by doing this, we would create an estimated additional 1,225 housing opportunities across the state over this 3-year period of time. The priority for the funding would be on increasing rental and homeownership opportunities in communities where the lack of housing is impacting job growth, as well as providing down payment assistance to first-time homebuyers through community-based nonprofit organizations and local units of government. So this is our workhorse for producing new housing opportunities across the state. And it's also a program that allows us to be nimble based on the types of proposals that the communities are telling us that they want to do and that they've kind of organized around when they come in through our consolidated RFP. Next slide, Dan. Second is the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program. Now, if you take a look at the enacted budget for 23 and 24, 25, the biennial enacted is $500,000. You know, I think this is an area where we're just hearing about so much demand and need, you know, all over the place. And so the governor's recommendations are, I can't even do this math, 48 times the size of the 23 budget, 48 times the enacted base. And this is really to increase the development, as the name says, of workforce and affordable home ownership projects. This is grants to cities, tribes, nonprofits, co-ops, and community land trusts. We think we could create an estimated 900 homes over 3 years with this level of funding. And this can be used for development costs, rehab, land development, and manufactured home community infrastructure. So another fantastic program that we see the opportunity just based on our experience at the lower levels of funding to really be able to expand and grow over time. Next slide, please, Dan. The Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Development Program. Boy, there's not a community with an employer that's growing that doesn't have a need for more housing to attract and retain employees without having people drive 50 miles to and from their jobs. If you take a look again at the current base, $2 million in 2023, $4 million for the biennium. So again, a substantial increase, fourfold in the base, for biennial base. I mean, this creates new rental housing. Actually, that groundbreaking picture, I think, at the beginning of this section was to create more of this type of housing. It tends to be targeted to cities and towns with populations under 5,000. These are our job hubs across Greater Minnesota. It would allow us to do about 865 new units of housing. And I think this is something, as I've had a chance to just get out and meet with the small city housing directors and local mayors and city council members. When you go to a ribbon cutting at one of these, you also have just lots of people from the community who are there in various capacities who are excited about the opportunity to do more of this type of housing. And grateful for the developers who are out there and willing to do what are oftentimes smaller scale projects out in Greater Minnesota. Next slide, please. The line item that we're calling flexible financing for capital costs is really something that is timely. We're proposing it as $10 million one time in the next fiscal year. And, what we're seeing right now, and I mentioned, the workforce challenges, labor issues, and the incredibly sky-high price of lumber, which just, has not been coming down. I mean, I think people thought that it had spiked for a variety of unique reasons related to the pandemic and tariffs and other things. But the price of lumber just hasn't come down. And if any of you are working on a home remodeling project or anything like that, I think you're feeling that pinch both in terms of supply and price. The agency has used agency resources through a line we call flexible financing for capital costs to help with gap financing on projects. Oftentimes when we select a project, it's kind of got an estimated price, but by the time they go to close, the actual costs are a little bit higher. What we're finding right now is that when a project is moving towards closing, the prices can actually be substantially higher because the labor shortage, contractors are only willing to hold a bid good for 30 days, and you just have this high price of materials. So this would allow us to cover some of the cost increases for projects that we have selected, including those that we've selected with housing infrastructure bonds. And we think that this would help us get approximately 333 units across the finish line. So it's a gap filling one-time request of $10 million to help get some existing project across the finish line during this period of extremely high cost drivers. Another new line item on slide 10 is what we're calling community stabilization. Folks have talked a lot here about naturally occurring affordable housing. We are proposing to start our work here with $100 million. This is the largest non-bonding budget item request that we have in our package the next fiscal year. And I think, again, I know we've had lots of discussion over the years on this. If we can preserve lower rent apartments in the community instead of having those be sold over to somebody who is going to remodel them and raise the prices, that what it takes to preserve that rental housing in the community is a lot less expensive in the long run than what it takes to build from scratch. And, you know, the number of these types of units that are being lost to lower income families, you know, has been eroding. That's not just a Minnesota problem. It's a national problem. And I think also, you know, there's increased conversation about previously owner-occupied single-family homes that when they go for sale are being scooped up by corporate buyers who convert them to rentals. So community stabilization would be a new program that could be used for folks to acquire, rehabilitate, and preserve existing rental and homeownership housing so that it remains affordable, that it is resold if it's a single-family home, so it remains owner-occupied. And so this is a line item that we're really excited about. And this is an opportunity to kind of come in with some, with dollars of a scale that it can begin to address what we're seeing out there. We're estimating that $100 million could preserve an estimated 2,850 homes. Next slide, please. I want to shift to the programs that we have that are around increasing housing stability. You know, I think that we all understand that housing stability is so essential to everything else that we want and need to do in life, whether it's attending to our health, being able to get to work or work from home, as the case may be. For kids to be able to ride the same school bus, to develop friends and not be in constant motion in their schools and their home life, and to age well in a home of our own. So first one is I want to talk about the Housing Trust Fund, which is our rental assistance program. If you take a look at this request, the 2023 enacted budget is about $11 million. We're looking at a $10 million dollar increase for fiscal year 2023, and more than doubling in the biennial base, adding $25 million to the base. You know, this was a program that that when it was initially created, designed to solve for. I always talk about the kind of three-legged stool of supportive housing. You need a capital investment, you need operating funds, and you need service financing. I think during the period where the agency was really growing the Housing Trust Fund, it was really understanding the fact that the HUD programs weren't keeping up with the need for rental assistance and for operating costs. So it's time for an infusion, and with the budget surplus, the time is now. So we can use this to just provide rental assistance for folks that are income qualified for federal assistance, but aren't able to get it. I think you all know that HUD housing choice vouchers are, I think, the only federal income qualified benefit that you can qualify in every way and not get assistance. I am, and in fact, only one out of four, or depending on your community, one out of five people who are income eligible actually are able to get a voucher. And oftentimes after a very, very, very long period on the wait list, if the wait list was even open for you to be able to get on it. So this is really a way for us to help meet that need. And also, it would help an estimated additional 1,500 households each year. Next slide, please. You know, the Homework Starts with Home program has been just an incredibly exciting program. It brings together schools and housing providers in order to meet the needs of homeless or highly mobile school-age kids. What we're proposing to do here is to expand it to help the youngest kids. To really reach that group between prenatal and pre-K. There's lots of emerging research about the importance of housing stability for pregnant moms during that pregnancy. To be able to have housing stability through that pregnancy in order to improve their birth outcomes. A child who's born into a stable home, greatly reducing their odds of, becoming homeless or perpetually homeless. The age group of Americans with the highest risk of becoming homeless are kids age zero. And that is just a very painful fact in America. And so this would allow us with these investments of $10 million for each year, and you can see that compared to the base, significant investment would allow us to provide an assistance for over 1,400 families each year. So this is a great opportunity to do this. I mean, there are 5,000 young kids who aren't yet in school, we estimate, who have been identified could really benefit from this because we see that through their access to state early childhood programs and the fact that those programs have identified them as being at risk of or experiencing homelessness. The Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program is another one of those programs that has allowed us to really do targeted intervention so that we can help families who are first experiencing homelessness, quickly get back into housing. I think the $19 million in 2023 and the $19 million added to the base, you can see that that's a significant increase over existing enacted levels. It would serve an estimated 19,000 additional households over 3 years. As we talk about the significant one-time federal resources, those were one-time dollars that we knew were going to run out in 2022. And I think we're all feeling the pain of the fact that as those funds run out, that it's just kind of leaving many renters back in the situation kind of with a frayed safety net that we had before the pandemic. So, this is a place where Minnesota Housing has a program that can really help reach out and work on not only prevention and housing navigation services, but also direct assistance, which would be a priority for the program. The Landlord Risk Mitigation Fund is a new budget line proposal for us. This is something that we've seen in a number of pilot projects in our sister agency over at the Department of Veterans Affairs, be a great kind of insurance tool for property owners who are hesitant to rent to somebody, perhaps because of just their credit history, their rental history, or their criminal justice histories. And by providing a risk mitigation fund to protect against kind of beyond the normal wear and tear or other damages, we found that this type of fund is effective in helping people be able to utilize, for example, a housing choice voucher or housing trust fund rental assistance. It doesn't actually tend to have to pay out as often as it just offers that backstop guarantee. It could also help us provide some case management services to really help support some of these harder to house would-be renters. I think just really what we've seen is that the rental market is just, ridiculously tight because we haven't been able to increase the supply of housing, especially housing that rents at the lower cost. And so we think that this would be a way to help about 2,000 people or households find stable housing. And it's it's a model that's been proven effective, not just here in Minnesota, but in other parts of the country. The next item is one where I'll try to curb some of my enthusiasm. For folks who don't know me well, just a brief reminder that I started my career in government programs in healthcare, Medicaid, managed care, and Medicare, and got brought into the conversation around ending homelessness because of the concept that people experiencing homelessness were actually very sick and weren't getting great care and good health outcomes, but instead of high cost to crisis and emergency services, including the emergency room, hospital, jail, shelter, other things like that. So that you had this kind of high cost, bad outcome loop that both people were stuck in and systems were stuck in. A poor use of public spending that wasn't really getting better outcomes for people. Now, I think it's been proven time and time and time again now here and across the country that permanent supportive housing is a proven intervention to help people with even the longest histories of homelessness and the most complex health and behavioral health conditions to achieve stability in housing. We know how to build it. We at Minnesota Housing, we select these in our capital investment projects every year. Providers know how to run it, but the piece of the puzzle that has just never been solved for is an adequate and reliable and sustainable source of service financing. But I'm not naive. You know, I understand that it's not just on the housing sector to be the purchaser of services. In fact, in Minnesota, prior to the Affordable Care Act, we had general assistance medical care. With the Affordable Care Act, we have people being eligible for our medical assistance program just because they're low income. And therefore, there really shouldn't be people who are living on the streets and shelters for prolonged periods of time who aren't eligible for healthcare through the medical assistance program. And yet we haven't been able to successfully construct a strong enough, broad enough, and long enough bridge to be able to get people engaged and into housing and then get them connected into a healthcare system that has the right services and supports to help people not only maintain their housing, but to achieve recovery and health and their other goals in life. So we're proposing $42 million, a significant investment, in order to create tools that allow us to tackle having a model for supportive housing where the developers and the operators of supportive housing feel like they understand how the services will be sufficient for them to want to house people who have even the longest histories of homelessness, the folks who have lived outside because they have not found the shelter options that we've had for them to be meeting their needs, people who are not getting screened into supportive housing because the supportive housing providers feel like the complexity of their needs are more than they can bear, or supportive housing providers that have been willing over the last couple decades to stand up new supportive housing units and to take people in, even though they know they're doing bake sales and fundraisers in order to raise private money in order to round out their service packages. So this is something that that I just am very excited about. I've been working closely with Commissioner Harpstead and her team at the Department of Human Services in order to be in dialogue about how do we create that bridge that ultimately brings in the healthcare sector and makes it possible to do this proven intervention that will actually ultimately provide some relief in terms of the high cost of healthcare and crisis and institutional services, but also importantly to improve people's health. All right, I'll take a deep breath, a sip of water, and then switch to the next category. Next slide, please, Dan. So homeownership. I just talked about homelessness. We talked earlier about preservation and the development of more units. you know, I know that the idea of homeownership is so important. You know, I mean, you know, it's still the American dream. And the reason it is, as you all know well, is because it is the opportunity to build wealth intergenerationally. It is that sense of community from really, you know, being someplace that you know your family is going to stay. It's, you know, such an important part of the continuum. It's not the only part of the continuum, but an important part of it. So we're proposing a significant increase to the appropriations for down payment and closing cost assistance. If you just take a look at the proposal here for $32 million, $12 million in 2023, $20 million for the next biennium, this is a substantial increase in investment by the state. You know, I think we have seen at Minnesota Housing where we've used some of the agency resources to grow this over time, that we have been able to increase our lending to first-generation homeowners and in communities of color by being able to provide that down payment and closing cost assistance for renters who have enough income to be able to buy, but they just don't have that family wealth, or they haven't been able to save enough to be able to you know, break into home ownership, if you will. And so when we're able to offer down payment and closing cost assistance, we've seen families be able to make that transition. I think last quarter, the agency exceeded its production in our first mortgage product, where for the first time we exceeded over 40% of the families that were getting a mortgage through Minnesota Housing. Were households identified as indigenous, Black, or from other communities of color. So this is a very kind of proven out opportunity and an area where we know that we can really, really, really help. There is an estimated 179,000 renting households between the prime home buying age of 25 and 44 who are potentially income ready to buy a home. I mean, obviously, with home prices increasing and interest rates on the rise for the first time in a long time, it just seems like this is the right time to make a large infusion in down payment and closing cost assistance. So very excited about this proposal. And, you know, obviously, I think that we are all aware that Minnesota has one of the largest gaps in the country in home ownership rates amongst white families versus home ownership rates for Black families. And this is a way for us to just go at it in a very, very targeted way. That's my slide deck, Chair Houseman. I would be happy to engage in conversation about anything or everything as relates to the governor and lieutenant governor's budget proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I'll give people a chance to get their hands up for questions. Representative Tice.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Ho. I really appreciate all the work. And I just have probably just a couple questions, and I really appreciate all the different parts of housing that are included in the presentation and the bill. One of the things that keeps coming up all the time is I will see Mayor Dan Fabian, so former representative, and the thing he talks about the most is the workforce housing. And right now Polaris is renting out 100 rooms a week to house folks. And so that need is so incredible because they need people to come up there, check out Roseville, see if they want to live there, and then they have no place for them to live. My city of St. Augusta, or one of my cities, is now going to try and do their own water system. And we have a bonding bill in place just to explore it, to look at the costs and such. But in the St. Cloud area, St. Cloud is one of our areas that probably has the most opportunity to include some new housing for our area. And so I'm hoping that we can get that bonding bill through so that we can look at, you know, what can we do? Another thing, and I'm not really sure I heard it, but since I'm older, I'm looking at senior housing. And quite frankly, I'm not going to sell my house to buy a little $300,000 patio home. And one of the things I've thought about very often is we see in the, what we would call, you know, where the snowbirds go, the communities of manufactured homes and different things like that. And have we ever really looked at that in some of our areas? I do know that probably some of the cities are going to say, we don't like that. But I think that we're losing a lot of seniors for different reasons. But one of them is, I don't want to sell my house and then get a bigger, you know, have a house that's worth more than what I'm currently in, because I can't find anything that I really want that's anything cheaper. So it would be really nice if we could look at some of those communities, maybe just figure out what that means. But I think Dan would probably, Mayor Fabian would probably appreciate that as well, as getting some type of housing up there, because building is getting to be very expensive, having been in the business for 35 plus years. I know it's been incredible. And then you can't find people to work. Another part that when we talked about the down payment and closing cost assistance, and we're talking about folks buying homes, we've had several renters that said, is there an opportunity for us to do rent to own? And part of that, part of the roadblock for us is that the house needs to be paid off. So I'm wondering if sometime, if we could look at, are there ways to do this without having the home paid off? Because I know a lot of people would probably look at that and say, yeah, I don't, you know, that's okay with me. In fact, we've got a couple renters that have asked us about it several times. And quite frankly, they've been with us since we bought the property. And they've told us several times, we probably will stay here forever. We have no intentions of moving. We like where we're at. And so it would have been nice to be able to offer them some suggestions. But like I said, the roadblock for us is it's not paid off. And so we can't offer those. And that is something I wish we would look at a little bit more. As I'm listening to some of these things, these are all coming to mind. So they're not really, what I want to say, well thought out. It's just, this is my initial thought. But it would be nice to have some dialogue about how could we look at that and what could we do? And maybe this is something where I even sit down with Representative Farr, who's on the committee, and say, you know, are you thinking of anything? And kind of get us engaged in those types of things. But I really appreciate seeing some money go towards housing. I hope that we do as much as we can to make sure that we keep it going, because like you said, there's no place you can go that they don't talk about housing. Everybody talks about housing. But I think we need to show that it is a priority here in Minnesota. I get disgusted when I see how little we spend on this and yet how much time we talk about it when we're talking about, you know, people staying here, number one, people finding a place to live, number two, but then all the pieces that could fall together with home ownership, like childcare and, you know, how everything just fits together. It's not just, oh, we just fix one part and everything's going to be fine. No, it's a whole ball of wax. And so I'm really glad to see that we are spending money. I just hope we look at some of the things that we may look out of the box and say, well, why not? Let's try this. And I appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Response to any of those issues?
I, your husband and Representative, I took notes, and I just want to touch base quickly on three of the points. Yeah, if I was looking down, it's because I'm taking notes. I look forward to being in person someday. I hope by the end of session we can do that. First of all, I'm excited to go back up to Roseau because we invested in a workforce project up there that is under construction, and it should be open this year. And it's one of the last places in the great state of Minnesota that I traveled to before we closed down. And I'm really looking forward to getting back up there and having another conversation. We met at Polaris. Guests of Senator Johnson, and the only thing I didn't have time to do was ride a snowmobile. But we really talked about the needs of housing up there, and you know, it's an interesting story, right? Because Polaris was on a tear, and then they were recruiting employees from as far away as Puerto Rico. And then they had a slowdown when things first stopped with COVID. And then we all decided we wanted to buy ATVs and snowmobiles because we were bored and wanted to play outside. And so then they've been back on a tear again. And so I get these needs, and I've traveled in that community with the mayor and the housing people and the Polaris folks. So looking forward to getting back up for that grand opening. The workforce line item here would address exactly that at a much larger scale. I didn't go into depth today about the things that are in the housing infrastructure bond and public housing preservation package, but $250 million for housing infrastructure bonds is $150 million more than the largest amount of authorization we've received, which is fantastic. And we've received $100 million in the last, I think, I want to say three sessions. Forgive me, it is a little bit of a blur. But we're seeing increased senior housing as a priority for housing infrastructure bonds, and we're seeing increased demand for that. We also have some targeted uses for the housing infrastructure bonds around single family construction, which will help us support the creation of more single family homes that first time homebuyers can afford, as well as support for manufactured home communities. We're seeing more and more activity by the agency around manufactured home communities. In fact, Representative Howard just popped in. We just made a selection in Richfield to help residents of a older, aging manufactured home community be able to acquire that community as a cooperative and make critical infrastructure investments. As talking to one of the fabulous grassroots organizer seniors in that community, and she described the water in that community as being like Pepsi. We're gonna help them get onto the city's water system as opposed to relying on a well that clearly is past its prime. And then, I don't know the circumstances, of course, of the renting family in your home, but it's one of those options where if they were eligible and the price point were right, you could actually put the home up for sale. That family could be helped with down payment assistance to help them make that crossover from being a renter to an owner. And they could get a first mortgage if they were income eligible through one of Minnesota Housing's lenders. So I hope I hit on the high points. And I think that we have parts of both the bonding side as well as the budget side that would address some of the pieces that you speak of. Thank you for your comments, Representative Tice.
Representative Tice, follow up. You are muted.
I do have another question. I've got a lot of notes here too. And when we're looking at the challenge program funding that supports home ownership, what percentage of that money goes towards home ownership?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Houseman and Representative Tice. When you take a look at it as the percentage of the money, and I presented this in the Senate, and I don't have my notes handy. We can follow up with the specifics. The percentage of the money doesn't look as big as when you understand the percentage of the proposals that came in that we mm-hmm. say yes to. Because we say yes to, I'd say 90% of the proposals that come in the door. The main issue is that the price of a large multifamily rental development is just going to be on scale much, much, much larger than a single family home. An area that we really need to attend to is increasing developer capacity, developers and communities that want to build these homes that are affordable to first-time homebuyers, because I think that everybody understands that communities want it. We need to build the ability of developers to produce it. But it is an area where we say yes to the vast majority of proposals that come in the door, sometimes not at the ambitious size that people come in at, but we have a lot of history with folks and we know what they've been able to produce in the past, and we don't like to tie up money in a current year that's not going to get used for multiple years out, when we know that we can kind of come back and refund people mm-hmm. through our incentive funds and other things. So we can get you those numbers, though. Dan will follow up with you. And again, would love to come up into your district and talk with some of the communities that you're mentioning in your comments.
Further follow-up, Representative Tice.
Just thank you. With with some of these grants and stuff, I'm just worried about our inventory and are we even going to have the housing to dish the grants out? And that was my question the other day to Representative Abaje is, what happens to the money if we just don't have the housing stock out there? And it just, you know, I would love to have you come in my district and look at some of the things that we're looking at. I know there are a couple developments, in fact, just right down 33rd Street South from me, closer to our tech high school. They're looking at doing some kind of a development, and I know they're just in the starting stages of that in St. Cloud, but there's some other areas around us as well that I think could benefit from some, quite frankly, innovative, out-of-the-box thinking of ways to do some type of housing. So I appreciate your coming to the committee today and letting us know what's going to be proposed, and thank you so much. Have a good happy St. Patty's Day.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Ho, for being here. I think I'll echo some of the sentiments of Representative Tice. We do definitely need to be thinking outside the box about how we can be creative about housing. I'll just first start saying, you know, thank you for this presentation. I think it's helpful to kind of understand where the revised supplemental budget is at. You know, one of the things that I'm sure you're well aware of, as many of us are, is the need is great in Minnesota. And so some of the questions I have is kind of how this additional funds can kind of begin to meet that need. So one of the first questions I have is a lot of the numbers that were discussed today, I'm wondering, particularly in the challenge program, is that one-time funds or is that funds that would be added to the base?
Commissioner?
Chair and Representative, for the challenge program on slide 6, if you have them in front of you, the $25 million increase in fiscal year 2023 would be one-time money for this biennium. But I think the presumption is that the 24-25 increase of $30 million would set a new high watermark for the base. I don't have Dan and Ryan right next to me, which means that neither of them can slip me a note or kick me. But they usually text me if I said something wrong, and I'm not seeing anything coming at me. So I'm sticking with it.
We can revisit that. Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My other question, kind of following up with the challenge program. Do you know, or maybe you guys can get back to us about how the challenge program is broken down between preservation of housing and new housing, and if the additional funding being proposed would go mostly to new housing or how that would break down for?
Commissioner.
Chair and Representative, I think we can get you those numbers as well. I think we respond to proposals that come to us, right? Communities across the state, developers across the state, decide what to put in our consolidated multifamily and single family RFPs. I'd say in some years, we do more preservation. In some years, we do more build from scratch. And then we do some things that are kind of hybrid. For example, with community land trusts, they might do both land acquisition and build on it, but they might also acquire an abandoned home and do a rehab. And so that's kind of both a preservation, but also getting a unit back on the market that wasn't there. I think from where I sit, we need preservation and we need production. And so, you know, I think it's not good for the agency to become focused only on one side of that, or we run the risk of getting out of balance. I think importantly, I think to what Representative Tice was just saying about the size of these investments, is that the agency and the governor and lieutenant governor didn't propose any line item here that we think is too large to achieve. And we think that if the development community, both nonprofit and for-profit and cities and tribes see that the state is making investments at this scale, that we will see more proposals for eligible uses across all these line items come in the door. Everybody knows, as you all are saying, that the need out there is great. And I think by your signaling a multi-year commitment, as using general fund and adding to the base does here, that the development community, I mean, you don't conceptualize one of these, you know, this isn't like, you know, your senior paper where you can pull a proposal in Minnesota housing together in the last 48 hours. I mean, these are sometimes multi-year partnerships, right? Where you are working on land, you're working on the partnerships, you're working on, you know, the city uses and things like that. But this type of proposal at this scale would signal to cities across the state and to developers that we as a state are serious in making year-to-year investments. And then I think that will give us a pool of proposals in our consolidated RFPs that allow us to do both new construction and preservation.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple more questions if you'll allow me. Thank you for that. I appreciate that explanation. One other piece I was interested in is the down payment assistance. And again, you can feel free to send me these numbers. But I was wondering the breakdown of the additional $12 million leading to over 2,000 households being assisted over the next 3 years. Do you have an idea of what those assistance amounts would look like as we're trying to move people into homeownership?
Commissioner?
You're asking, thank you so much for that question. I mean, I think we have a long experience as an agency doing down payment and closing cost assistance. And we actually have program guides where we set who's income eligible, what are the terms of that down payment loan, you know, so that people don't get down payment assistance, buy a house and turn around and sell it. That, you know, they would have to pay us back in terms like that. But if folks, you know, stay in the home, sometimes it is, you know, it's forgiven over time, or it's at a very, very low interest, depending on family's income. You know, the average down payment assistance is about $12,000. We're actually currently looking at, given the rising price of homes, how do we adjust the amount of down payment and closing cost assistance that's available for us that has adjusted a little over time and goes with the market. But we can certainly send you some of our historical data and the current program guidelines for the amount of assistance. You know, I know that what we're doing is effective because we have broken our production records on the single family first-time homebuyer side year after year after year, including right through the pandemic, which kind of blew my mind that we've exceeded production in each of these pandemic years.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I will just kind of close out on this comment. I'm sure I have lots more questions, but I won't take up the rest of the time. You know, again, thank you for having this focus on housing. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things, though, I think that's still kind of hard to reconcile is the fact that, you know, we haven't done as much as we need to in Minnesota. And, you know, and even though we're trying, we know that there's still some very much acute needs needed right now. I think one of those areas, many of my colleagues might agree, is still in how we're supporting people, particularly in this moment still with COVID, people continuing to lose their jobs and at the same time losing their homes. You know, we still have very big needs in supporting people to keep their homes that they're renting or even keep the homes that they own. And so I'm hoping that we can continue to find ways to work together, to think innovatively about strategies to ensure that we are supporting people in their times of crisis, as well as thinking long-term about how to move people in, you know, from shelter to transitional housing to home ownership, should that be what they desire. It's good to see that there's some good foundations here, and I hope that we can continue to build on that because, as we've said, the need is so great and people are really actively suffering right now, and we should be able to step up and meet that need. So thank you so much.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for the presentation and for the budget. And that's where I want to start, is just gratitude to the Governor and Minnesota Housing for what in its entirety is a very strong historic investment in housing. In particular, I'm grateful for the $100 million to address NOAA preservation. I think that would be an absolute game changer, and hope that we can, for the first time in and make that kind of investment in preservation because of all the important reasons why we need to do so. I do also need to, on the morning that the governor's updated supplemental budget came out, voice some disappointment that there were no resources for emergency rental assistance, and just want to offer some comments to challenge us really about the, what's facing our renters. Right now, 220,000 renters in our state earn less than 50% of AMI, and they're paying more than 30% of their income in housing. And as we've seen federal rental assistance dollars be expended and other federal aids, we're seeing a surge of renters who are struggling. And we're still in a pandemic. And so with a $9 billion surplus, it was disappointing that the governor did not choose to include any resources for emergency rental assistance. Look, a couple earning $250,000 a year doesn't need a $1,000 check, especially when we have renters who are making a tenth of that struggling to make rent and avoid evictions. And so I understand we need significant resources to address this challenge with any sort of scope or scale. And the challenges are immense across the spectrum, which is why I'm grateful for this big and bold overall budget. But I just want to challenge us not to look away from our renters who are struggling most in this moment. We can't pretend that this isn't an urgent challenge. We can't decide that this isn't our responsibility to bring forward solutions, especially with a $9 billion surplus. And so again, I thank the governor and I thank you, Commissioner, for an overall strong budget and look forward to our partnership. There's so much I think that we're going to be pulling in the same direction on, and we need to be, but I just want to call out that we can and should be making better choices, ones that are grounded in our values, where we target our resources where they are needed most. Feel free to react to that, Commissioner, but that's what I wanted to bring to the conversation this morning.
Commissioner.
Chair Houseman and Representative Howard, you know, thank you. I hear the stories of people who were helping with emergency rental assistance, and I also hear the stories of people who, since we had to close to do applications because we're running out of money, the stories that they bring to the 211 and our field partners, and so certainly from the center. And you know, Chair Houseman, I think the bill to replenish Rent Help MN got referred to Ways and Means. And, you know, in our conversation with the governor's office, if that bill can get passed and quickly, we would be enthusiastic about that. I think as we've discussed, the complexity of trying to shut down a program that's run out of money and then and start it back up at such time as the legislature is done with its business, is why the governor didn't put it in his proposal, because he sees this as a part of the regular budget cycle. But if you're able to expedite something through the process, I am confident that the governor would enthusiastically sign it into law. I think the contributions to building up the Family Homeless Prevention Program, the need to have a kind of deal with the structural issues of supply and price. We need to have a long-term fix instead of just a series of short-term solutions. As housing commissioner, I feel like every day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't hear a story about a Minnesota family that's struggling to make rent. And you're right. I mean, some of us are back out, on airplanes and movie theaters and restaurants, and we didn't have the economic hardship. But for folks who lost jobs and lost family members due to COVID and so many other things, like, their economic recovery is on a long trajectory. And yeah, I think we just need to keep that front and center.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for this presentation. I just want to echo what Vice Chair Howard, said about the rental assistance. Every single conversation I've had in the last 2.5 years have been about, support for families to stay them, to keep them housed, because it's, as you know, and all of us in this committee know, it's actually much easier to keep people housed than to house them after they've been affected and become homeless or they're in shelter. So I really wanna, you know, highlight, emphasize, underline that we really need to put money on that account so we can continue helping families stay housed. And I do represent a district that's 86% renters. So that's really all the conversations that I'm having is about rent assistance. I just have quick questions about the home ownership. Home ownership has been, a really challenge, and 61,000 PIPOC renters are eligible, qualified homeowner, can be qualified for home ownership, but can't find a home to purchase because we don't have enough inventory. And is it my understanding that, maybe I misread that presentation, that the challenge, funding, it's only 100 new ownership units. Is that what I saw on that, or is it just my understanding?
Commissioner.
Chair, and a couple things is that Challenge isn't our only production program. So I just want to make sure that people understand that we're doing single family through the housing infrastructure bonds. We're doing single family through the workforce and affordable home ownership line item. So there's multiple ways at which we come at single family production. And so it's not just Challenge. And I just want to make sure that I was clear about that. When you take a look at the Challenge slide, I think the estimation here is that we would create over 1,225 new housing opportunities. How Challenge gets allocated between production, preservation, multifamily, and single family really has to do with the proposals that communities send into us every year through the consolidated RFP. We really aim to have a balance in terms of how we use Challenge for single family and multifamily. In fact, since I got asked the question earlier, Dan sent me a note that it tends to split about 40-60, 40% single family, 60% multifamily. But one of the drivers on why is it uneven is just because multifamily are large projects, multi-unit, and so just doing one kind of tends to tip the scales. Yeah, I would really point you towards the workforce and affordable home ownership program increase. I mean, I think I said it's 48 times the investment of the current budget base, and 4,800% I'm a long ways away from my calculator. But I mean, that is a line item where we really could do some serious production and really stuff that's targeted. So I would really focus on that plus Challenge. Challenge can be used for renter or home ownership, but if you come into the workforce and affordable home ownership program, it can be used exclusively for home ownership. So if you want to kind of like guarantee that you've got investments that are going to result in workforce and affordable home ownership, that line item is a good place to start. I hope that answers your question, Representative Hassan.
Representative Hassan.
It kind of does. I just want to, remind us that we have almost $10 billion surplus in home ownership, affordable housing, addressing homelessness. This whole spectrum has been a problem for our state. We're not short in resources, we're short in priority. So I'm hoping that, we are going to prioritize to make sure that no one in Minnesota is struggling with this issue, whether we can help with rent assistance, whether we can fund our shelters appropriately, or get people who are qualified for mortgage affordable home ownership programs. We can spend a lot of money on down payment assistance, but if there are no affordable homes to purchase, I feel like that money won't be useful to anybody. So increasing the production of affordable homes should be a high priority. And I'm hoping that is a high priority for you and your agency. I'm just a little, disheartened that this budget is not as high, as high as I was hoping, knowing that the last 2 years, all we have been hearing is about the crisis in housing. And when I look at this budget, yes, there is some increases, but not enough to keep everyone housed and everyone on the home ownership pathway, and to make sure that we're closing all the disparity gaps in every spectrum, in the spectrum of housing and every level. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Ho. Thanks for being here today and walking through the budget with us. I have one request and one question. The request first, when I was going through the presentation in advance and then when you walked through it, it's not clear to me where we have one-time funding and where we have base increase. And for me, it's really important to be explicit and clear about that. And so if you could just follow up with something, and maybe it's called out in other documentation that I haven't seen or I haven't looked at yet. But to me, that's very important in terms of understanding our ongoing commitment to funding. So that's my request. My question is about long-range planning to address the gaps. The discussion today was primarily in the context of growth in the budget compared to our current level of investment, which we all agree is very low. And it, you know, and it's encouraging growth in many areas. And I will say that, echoing other people. I would love to see that reframed to say, what does this new level of investment look like versus the need in these categories? What will it take? What would it take to get us where we want to be? And then especially, what is the long range plan to get there? What does the investment strategy over time look like? Because as you've pointed out, these projects are on a longer timeline for development and implementation. So how do we get from a few hundred units in various categories per year to the full array of housing that that we all agree we need, that Representative Tice spoke about, that all of the other commenters spoke about. So as a planner, that's the direction I'm interested in understanding better.
Commissioner?
Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. So first of all, I think we can get this to in spreadsheet form. But the only three items that are proposed here as one time are the landlord risk mitigation funds, the flexible financing for capital costs, and the community stabilization program. Those are proposed as one-year investments in the current biennium. So if you take a look in total, what we do is about $225 million just in 2023. And $184 million in the next biennium increase. And, you know, current biennium is about $126. So this is a $184 million increase over and above the current base in the next biennium. And then that sets, again, the starting point for our next discussions next year, I guess, another budget year. So sorry that it wasn't clear in here. We maybe should have just started with a spreadsheet. On the question of scale, I just came back from Washington, D.C. for my trade association, the National Council of State Housing Agencies annual legislative conference. It's the first time we were able to do it in person since I left DC on March 11th of 2020, elbow bumping and washing the heck out of my hands and using hand sanitizer before we were masking and when we were putting our deliveries in the closet for 7 days before we opened anything up. But I got a chance to sit in person with members of our congressional delegation and to have a conversation because, you know, there were proposals for substantial federal investments in housing in the broader Build Back Better proposal. And it seems like the housing portions of that are going to be carved off if a more limited bill is passed and they're going to have to find another vehicle. You know, and when I sit in cabinet meetings with my colleagues are responsible for whole systems. You know, the Commissioner of Corrections is responsible for the state correction system. The Commissioner of Human Services is responsible for health and human services. You know, Commissioner Malcolm is responsible for the public health system. The housing system in America is a private market system with a patchwork quilt of public assistance that is frayed. And it's going to require investments at all levels of government. You know, for Minnesota Housing and the state of Minnesota to scale these programs to meet need is going to require substantial leverage of private capital, which we do through our housing tax credits and we do through our bonding. It's going to require a scaling of federal direct assistance. We're pleased to have a federal budget that just got signed into law. A substantial increase for the Home Investment Partnership Program, which is money we get for HUD, which is gap filler and allows us to buy down rent at affordable levels. Largest ever contribution to the National Housing Trust Fund, which are based on Fannie Mae and Freddie earnings, which we use via HUD. Again, do very supportive housing and very low rent housing. But, you know, I would say that even with the enormity of this budget proposal, what we're doing is signaling that we're serious about solving this. And we understand that development is an on-off switch, that we can't do it in fits and starts. We need to have a commitment to doing it year over year over year. And by making this type of general fund contribution to the base, as well as the one-time investments in the current biennium, I think what we're saying is that we as the state of Minnesota, a partnership between the legislature, Minnesota Housing, and community developers are saying we want to make investments over time that are going to help us solve this problem. So I appreciate it because, I worked on models for how to end homelessness when I was with the federal government, and they were real models based on what do we think it's really going to take. What I say is that these are critical investments, and they have enormous leverage. And then we're trying to also grow the pools that they leverage. Our tax exempt bonding, the value of the tax credits, and the size of the federal appropriations that help create the capital stacks that allow us to do this work. So thank you for the question. I don't know if it was a specific request to model this out. That modeling takes time across the full continuum of housing. But I do think that the previous governor's affordable housing task force did some good math in terms of helping us understand the need. I think the numbers that Representative Gomez, you're talking about in the homelessness committee, you know, we've done some good work in that space. I would say that the level of investments that the governor and lieutenant governor are proposing put us on a path to be big and bold like we have to, but I would not represent that this solves anything. I would say one more time, we didn't propose anything at a scale that we think can't be deployed. We don't like parking money. We don't like sitting on money. So we have used our experience to make proposals at the size that we think that they're deployable.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Ho. I like the overall framing of your approach to the planning, and I appreciate you laying that out. And I also appreciate that you aren't asking, biting off more than you can chew, so to speak, in terms of the money you take. My question this isn't a go do something question. This is more of a, perhaps we could sit down and have a really detailed conversation about how you think about it, because I'm still curious about how the, I think it was $184 million ongoing addition to the base leverages funds and what is that going to get us? And in the combination of the whole sphere of moving us as a state and all of the communities that are struggling with housing issues in so many varied ways, how is that going to get us there? And when are we going to see something that we're not still just saying we're in crisis, but we're actually seeing progress? So that's what I'm looking for. And I think that might be a follow-up conversation. I'll let you tell me.
Commissioner, and maybe I would just add to that. And it's really kind of a theme that you've been hearing from a number of people. I think what has happened this legislative session is that the bills we have heard have given us just an unbelievable sense of the scope of the problem. And when those authors brought those bills, when they had dollar amounts in their requests, they were informed by all the groups they were working with. In other words, it was real challenges across the state that the authors were bringing to us. And the dollar amounts all supersede what we see here. And so I think the context in which we're hearing the presentation today is in the context of all of those bills that members brought that reflected the real needs that groups around the state brought to them and worked with them on. And they believe those numbers were real. And so I think it's that disconnect that we're all maybe struggling with a little bit. So
Chair Houseman, may I just comment on that?
Absolutely.
I have likened this to playing card games, although much more seriously, but a partner card game, 500, bridge, whatever your partner card game is, and you're sitting across the table from somebody, and you've got a pretty good hand, but they make the opening bid. Imagine the governor sitting across the table from you as your partner, and you just heard that the opening bid was $1 billion for housing and homelessness. You're looking at your hand, and you're saying, my tens and jacks are worth a lot more than I thought they were. I think we can go bigger. I've got two candles I'll light every night. One for the House to get an amazing target for your housing budget, and the other for the Senate to get an amazing target for your housing budget. And I look forward to figuring out how to mesh those two amazing targets with the $1 billion, the $719 million that we start with here in the governor's proposal. This is an unprecedented moment in time. And to be able to serve as commissioner with this budget environment, I do just want to comment on something because I don't want to underplay something. Representative Ryer, you said we're not biting off more than we can chew. For the agency to push this level of resource through the agency, will be a massive effort. We will have to do a lot of chewing to do this, but this is what we need to do. You know, we have to stop being incremental. And I guess the last thing I would just say, Chair Houseman, if I may, is that, I'd be happy to do a hearing just on federal policy on this stuff too. I mean, we've got a bipartisan bill called the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act in Congress that was actually passed by the House as a part of Build Back Better that would give us more resources in the housing tax credit, which is the largest source of capital that we have for investing in housing creation and preservation. But we need to have something for it to attach to get passed. So whether it's a tax extender bill at the end of the year, but we have bipartisan support for that. So we're trying to do everything we can in terms of the federal conversation to make sure that we're leveraging resources. In fact, we're moving backwards with the tax credit if we don't get this bill passed in DC, because they did a one-time increase to the value of the tax credits, and that's expiring at the end of this year. And so if we don't get the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act passed, we actually have less resources available through our federal channels. So I just say that because I know that you also talk to the congressional delegation. And I think, what I heard from a person when we were out there is that they understand the need for federal resources for housing in Minnesota. And so if you have an opportunity to rub elbows with the congressional delegation, I would reinforce that this needs to be a state, federal, local partnership. We all need to invest. So that's I'm getting off my soapbox, ma'am, and we'll be quiet until spoken to.
I see no other questions from members. So Commissioner, if you have any concluding comments, we are near the end of our time, but if you have any closing remarks.
Thank you. And thank you, Chair Hausman, for giving me the generosity of a full hearing to be able to talk about the governor's budget proposal. One of the things I learned early in working with the governor and lieutenant governor is that they were never offended when they went big and advocates went bigger. I think we all understand the importance of these investments in housing. And I can't imagine being in a legislative discussion where I would come back and say, whoa, that's too big. I really appreciate whether we're talking about trying to get a quick infusion of more money for Rent Help MN, or whether we're talking about these longer term investments. I just really appreciate the spirit with which your comments and questions were offered today. I know that we are all champions for meeting the housing needs of Minnesota. And I just wanna thank you for your time and your deep knowledge and your passionate advocacy that we get these. I'll keep lighting those two candles every night.
That was very, very helpful to hear. I think we have concluded. Members, our next meeting will be on Tuesday, March 22nd. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.